Welcome to Canary in a Cornfield, a podcast from the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, where we explore how the policies that shape our food and farming systems impact our health, our communities, and our future. As most of our listeners probably know, the Harkin Institute was founded upon the retirement of longtime public servant and Iowa legend Tom Harkin, in order to continue doing high-quality work on the policy issues that were important to him.
In this week's episode of Canary in a Cornfield, we're going to be talking with Patty Lavera of the Campaign for Family Farmers and the Environment about an issue that is often proposed as a quote-unquote solution to many of the environmental problems produced by Iowa's huge concentration of animal feeding operations. And that proposed solution is biogas digesters for manure. So basically the idea is that by having the manure digested and converted into methane, that will create an energy source that would then help to lessen the environmental impact. But as we're gonna find out from Patty, the environmental problems don't really go away. There's still a creation of biosolids from that process that need to be disposed of in one way or another or put back on fields. And it's also the case that some of these operations wouldn't even be profitable without the biogas digesters. And so it's basically a system that's incentivizing the creation of more and more of these concentrated animal feeding operations and all of the issues that come with them. So with that, we're gonna dive in and talk to Patty Lavera.
Well, I'm excited today to be joined by Patty Lavera to talk about an issue that is periodically in the news in Iowa and is something that is often pushed as a potential solution to environmental problems. But when you get in the nitty-gritty, it gets pretty complicated. And so that's what our guest today is going to be breaking down for us. So, Patty, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Always happy to talk about dumb ideas in manure.
Great. Well, I guess, first of all, maybe you could say a little bit about your background, because I know you've worked for several organizations. So could you tell me a little bit about your career?
Sure. So I started out as a youngster thinking about environmental issues and a lot of environmental health and community level, what we would now call environmental justice issues. And then stumbled my way into, by accident, working on food policy, which led pretty quickly to thinking about agriculture. It was very hard to separate the quality and safety of food from how it's being produced. And more years ago than I'm going to say on this, started looking at how animals are raised and the dramatic transformation that's brought us this factory farm system. And so did that for a lot of years at an organization called Food and Water Watch. Pretty big organization working on these issues, lots of different tactics, doing policy, doing organizing, all these different things. And then now I am working with a coalition of groups called Campaign for Family Farms and the Environment. So it's some national groups and some state-based groups from the Midwest. And what we have in common is we're looking for things to do together to take on what we call the factory farm system. This concentration, raising animals in this incredibly consolidated way, we don't have that by accident. We have it because of a lot of policy and economic forces and choices that have been made. So we look for things together that we can try to get at, as well as the great work people are doing on the ground, fighting permits and trying to have accountability for these factory farms. We also want to get at those root causes of why we have them.
And I think those economic considerations are going to be coming up in our discussion today. So the topic for today is biogas digesters and the suggestion that they are a way of mitigating the environmental impacts of concentrated animal feeding operations. So I was wondering, could you say a little bit more about how the idea of biogas digesters came about, what problem they're supposed to be solving?
Sure. So the concept of what a digester is doing is not new. People have known if you have some amount of organic material, if we're talking about factory farms, that's from lots of food animals being raised together, you have all of them in one place, you're going to have all of their waste in one place. And if you are managing that waste in a way where you're storing it in an environment without oxygen, it's anaerobic, there's no oxygen, we know that when that waste breaks down, it can create a lot of gases, including methane. So the same thing can happen on a much smaller scale, and people have used this concept for a long time and captured the gas to do something with it because that gas will burn. So it's happened on a very small scale for a long time when people figured out this phenomenon. But what we're talking about when we're talking about factory farm gas, I'm giving away the punchline, and we think this is a technology that's inextricably tied to having large amounts of farm animals in one place. So especially if you are dealing with animals where their manure is managed in a liquid manure system. So hog factory farms and dairy factory farms in particular, there's some side conversations about what you can do with poultry waste, but they tend to manage that dry and you don't have this same breakdown in a liquid system. So that's a different conversation, but for especially hog and dairy factory farms, it's a lot of waste stored in a way where it is anaerobic. There's not oxygen, so we know that methane is created. And so many years ago, there were different waves where it became trendy for some company to say, you can capture that methane from your manure management system, from the lagoon, and you can do something with it. So there was an early generation, especially on dairy farms, where they were putting a cover over the lagoon, capturing the methane, and then using it to burn right there and generate electricity. And it was pitched as this on-farm energy closed loop. And it just, there's probably a couple of them somewhere still running, but it didn't really pan out. There tended to be tough to run, pretty finicky engineering. It seems like it was pretty hard on the machinery. It would burn out. And then it just got very complicated with electricity markets of still being on the grid, but making your own electricity. It just got very complicated and it never really took off, that first generation. We're now in a second or third generation, depending on how precise you want to be, where it, as the scale of factory farms around the country has gotten bigger, the dreams of this digester sector have gotten bigger too. And so there are more and more proposals and actual sites being built where it's larger amounts of manure, either from larger individual factory farms or feeding in from multiple factory farms to a central digester. So the digesters are bigger, the pool of feedstock they're using to make the methane, the manure, that pool is bigger, and they are taking the gas often elsewhere to do something with it. So maybe they refine it a little bit and they put it in a gas pipeline. Maybe they truck it somewhere to put it in a pipeline. And it can turn into transportation fuel, or it could end up generating electricity somewhere. But it's happening at a much more centralized, larger scale than the original wave of these on-farm digesters.
That's interesting. So Iowa has 109 billion pounds of animal waste generated every year. So I guess we could see why people might initially think that this idea has some legs here. So the concept would be, well, we have all of this animal waste and hey, this is a way of dealing with the animal waste. I'm doing air quotes for people who are listening to audio. And also an alternative form of energy that is not coming from coal or oil. So that's the idea behind it. But I've seen you present in other places and that logic doesn't pan out. So could you say a little bit more about why it doesn't really work?
Yeah. So the initial pitch, it attracts a lot of people. You see a lot of folks go for it. There's a tremendous amount of hype around this technology. And you can just watch people be like, wow, it really is the silver bullet, right? It's win, win, win. So the pitch, which we chalk up mostly to greenwashing, is we have this manure problem. And so in California, it takes this form. In Iowa, it takes this form. But we've concentrated animal production in the food system. Therefore, we've concentrated all that manure. What are we going to do about it? And there is a methane situation when you are storing liquid manure in that way, you are creating methane. So that's the pitch. Well, we have this waste, we're stuck with it. Let's get in there and extract some value from it, capture this methane, which is a greenhouse gas. And at first glance, it seems appealing. But when you start to look into the details of actually setting this system up are less attractive, and the long term playing out what we're doing if we choose this path, what we're deciding for our future, where it doesn't hold up, especially for communities who are living with these facilities. So the short term is it's incredibly expensive. These are big, very complicated systems to run. So there's the digester itself is not cheap, often millions of dollars per individual site. And you could be looking at parts of the country like North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina. There's a lot of pretty old hog factory farms. And there are proposals there and pitches there to put a digester on each site, which might be hundreds of thousands to $1 million each. And then that's just to get the gas. And then you have to move the gas to where you're going to use it. So is that building pipelines? Is it compressing gas and putting it on trucks and driving it to a pipeline? There's so much infrastructure, all of which costs money. And this is also a very expensive way to make what is essentially natural gas. It's a different feedstock, but you're ending up with natural gas. And so it doesn't actually pay for itself. This is an industry that is very open about its need for subsidies. So if you look at the engineering companies, the gas companies that are getting in this business, their model only works with a lot of public money. You could do a very long list of the sources of public money. So some of it comes from specifically from California. They have a low carbon fuel standard where California subsidies for supposedly cleaner energy. And there's been a lot of shenanigans in the calculations of what is clean in their definitions that give too much credit to manure as a fuel source. But that money is paying for digesters to be built around the country, outside California. We're in a flux right now, but it seems like a lot of the subsidies that were created by the Inflation Reduction Act a couple of years ago, some of those subsidies have gone away, but the ones that are paying for digesters seem to be surviving. So there's a federal source of subsidies. We see money coming from USDA. The Department of Agriculture has very large sources of funding for conservation practices on farms, which is great. But we have a long problem of smaller farms applying for those funds and being told they're out of money. No funding for you to put up fencing around your pastured livestock operation, which does not create the manure problem that factory farms do. They get turned away again and again, but a large factory farm can get one of these grants from that very competitive source of money to either help fund a digester or fund all of the manure management infrastructure you need to feed into a digester. So it's competing for resources that could be better spent. And you still have waste at the end. The laws of physics still apply. There's solid and liquid material going into this digester. They're extracting the gas, but they're not vaporizing this waste into nothing. There is still liquid waste to be land applied and dealt with, and no new rules to manage it safely and protect surface water and groundwater in the community where you're land applying it. And the same thing goes for there is still solid waste. It's called digestate, but it's just manure that has gone through some chemical transformation, but it's still solid material that has to be dealt with. And we're starting to learn more that it might actually be riskier for water quality in some circumstances, because it might make the pollutants, the nitrogen and the phosphorus, more available to be moving in water. So it's not a silver bullet. The problem that original community had of too much waste in one place, it doesn't make that problem go away. It's incredibly expensive. And long term, if you do this, you just spent a lot of money on a pretty speculative financial question of, is this economic model of this digester that is really dependent on multiple public subsidies, is that going to continue to cash flow if those subsidies go away? Is it going to continue to make sense if the natural gas market crashes for some reason and it looks their gas is even more expensive than fossil natural gas? And a bunch of money was spent to build all of this infrastructure that's feeding into this very complicated financially engineered system. We're going to spend a bunch of money. We could probably invest in real renewable energy that doesn't have all of this speculation. And we could also transition some operations out of confinement where you were creating this manure problem in the first place. So if there's money available at the scale that digesters take, I think communities on the ground have a lot better solutions for how to spend that money that transform us rather than just trapping us in this factory farm system with some engineering on top.
Well said. Okay. So just going through the list of the claimed positives. So of course, the big thing that attracts a lot of eyeballs is, oh, isn't this financially good? And it sounds like from what you're saying, even though I'm sure there are specific companies that are making a lot of money on it, it doesn't sound like a financially great proposition for the public. And one of my previous guests had a really great quote that was something like, concentrated operations lead to concentrated risk. And it sounds like that very much applies to this situation. Then the other suggestion is that, well, it helps us to get rid of all of this animal waste and can help clean up our water. And it sounds like that is not actually the case either, since it still has these biosolids that are, as you mentioned, still need to be applied on fields and could lead to worse problems. What about in terms of climate change? Is it leading to any benefits for climate change to be using gas from manure rather than coal or oil?
Yeah, this is one of the pitches, part of the hype. The Environmental Protection Agency is a big booster of this technology. They are not neutral. And on their website, they're like, oh yeah, you're not going to feasibly run a digester with less than 3,000 hogs. They have numbers, and most people laugh at that and say would only see them much larger, right? You're not going to see this on smaller operations where the animals are mostly outside and not concentrated. Like a pasture-based system doesn't create methane in the way that liquid manure systems do. So like that's the first dividing line. But one of the pieces of hype we get from this industry is that they're part of some climate solution. That's what's driving a lot of the subsidies, is that belief that this is part of how you tackle the greenhouse gas burden that is created by large dairies, large hog farms. And it's in the, if you're doing that calculation, it really matters where you draw the boundary of what you're counting. So we're starting to see, especially in the dairy sector, that it seems like when you build a digester, it makes more sense to bring more animals onto that operation because you've sunk all that money into that. And so you need to keep feeding the machine, and you feed the machine with manure. So herd expansion, where you're dealing with the rest of the emissions from that cow that come from the front end when they burp, that come from the nitrogen fertilizer used to grow the feed for them. Like, if you're counting all of that, and this is all, there's lots of raging debates and like dueling models and what gets counted. But if you're counting the whole footprint of an industrial dairy, yes, you might be reducing some methane at the end of the lagoon, but if we're just making the system bigger and more intensified, you might be wiping out any gain you got from the digester. And then day to day, there's a lot of questions about downtime, breakdowns, leakage, flaring gas if the digester isn't running. There's a lot of questions, and people are starting to look into this, like in California, where it's very, very entrenched, to see, are we actually getting the methane reduction that is promised on paper? And that's still emerging. But even if you are, the way that digesters drive us to a more consolidated system, that more consolidated system is worse for the climate. And then the third piece is the missed opportunity, right? If we are spending big piles of money to make the food system more climate friendly, there are smarter ways to do it, like transitioning CAFOs into pasture-based operations. Like, there's a lot of just more durable fixes if there's money flying around to do transformative things.
Yeah. So the system basically incentivizes more animals. It also is set up where it incentivizes building more of these operations, which would then include more animals. And so it seems like that negates the methane claim, or potentially negates that. But then, of course, as we talk about a lot on this podcast, there's numerous public health and environmental problems from huge concentrated animal feeding operations. And if you're incentivizing the many, many more of them, it seems like even if you break even on the climate change question, you're just incentivizing all of these other environmental and public health problems.
Yeah, and I'm not conceding that it solves the methane problem, but if it did, and we've fixed nothing for these frontline communities who are dealing with clusters of hog CAFOs or large industrial dairies, and that model could get worse if you start building centralized digesters, you're going to draw the CAFOs to them, to that hub, then you've not eliminated the day-to-day odors, dust, traffic, et cetera. And also then the longer term threats of like, there's still waste at the end. It's probably going to be applied to the land, where most states are not writing new rules for doing that. And then all of the water quality and other public health impacts that come from that, all of that has to be addressed, even if you're dealing with the climate piece, which I don't think they're dealing with.
Right. And that's just, that really, in where I live in Iowa, is just the central problem is the huge amount of manure and fertilizer that's applied on fields. And so if we're not dealing with that, we're not really getting at the core the core issue. I also wanted to just touch on, you mentioned like traffic and the infrastructure around these things, because just something that I heard that I thought was kind of fascinating, of like just the small details that don't immediately occur to me, was someone, I heard a farmer in Wisconsin who was near one of the dairy operations, the biogas digesters. And she talked about the fact that there are these huge trucks driving by multiple times a day, and that the roads actually get damaged really quickly and break down really quickly. And it's also just a public nuisance. So yeah, it sounds like they're a nuisance in many different ways.
I mean, one way to think about it, and one thing we're hearing more community groups talk about is, yes, like the source material for this might be agricultural, right? It is manure that's agricultural, but this looks a hell of a lot more like an industrial facility at this scale. The trend in the industry is moving towards larger centralized digesters, bringing in their feedstock from multiple sites that might be multiple CAFO sites. And some of them are also mixing in food waste to hear people talk about co-digesters. And so that's got to get there somehow, right? So that's trucks. So what are the rules for that? What kind of community is it in? Are the roads up to it? Who's responsible? And then to add danger to the front end insult, and then maybe another route, is that some of them are talking about trucking the gas somewhere, which is a hell of a thing to think about, going by your house a couple times an hour, a truck full of like pressurized natural gas driving to a pipeline. That doesn't look like agriculture as people know it anymore. It looks pretty industrial, and your local government may or may not be ready for that. What is the accident? What's the disaster response? What is the fire department ready for that? This is a gas plant, right? Like, things are happening that are literally explosive. Like, what is the plan? Who pays for it? Who's liable? So communities are networking together around the country and sharing. And a lot of what they're doing is sharing lists of questions that have to be asked upfront by local officials before they let one of these things in, because this is not just an agricultural processing facility on the edge of town, right? It looks a lot different if you're a neighbor.
Yeah. I saw you present to Iowa CCI a few weeks ago, and you talked a little bit about the political dynamics in a way that I thought was really interesting, and how this, like, there's sort of a certain group of people who this really appeals to. And I was wondering if you could expand more on the way in which this is used as greenwashing and how it fits into different political debates.
Yeah, this is a couple of powerful industries coming together. So that creates lots of opportunities for, we'll call it weirdness, so I don't curse. So we have an agriculture system that is very, very consolidated. Usually each sector is usually run by a couple powerful companies in each region. They're very good at hiding behind individual, quote unquote, small businesses. But the big processors of milk, buyers of milk and buyers of animals, the meat packers, are usually calling the shots of like what the sector looks like in their area. And increasingly, it looks like fewer farms, but much bigger. So that's what gives us this waste problem. And they're starting to feel some pressure in some places about the waste problem. They could respond to that by creating a market and creating a business model that would let people spread out and have smaller operations. Or they could exercise a lot of political will to try to just cover up and not be regulated and not have their concentrated waste continue or cost them any more to manage. Then when you turn this into this gas structure, now we've brought in gas companies and the oil industry, and they're pretty good at getting their way as well. Yet somehow it has been packaged in a lot of parts of the country as this green solution. And there are folks who should know better who are falling for it, in part because they can say, look, we see this methane problem, or maybe they're even willing to concede, we got a lot of manure and it's causing problems for our environment. And if they don't scratch the surface and they're willing to just take the glossy brochure version, this looks like a win they can hide behind. And then they don't have to do anything to take on these big, powerful interests like people running large factory farms or their trade associations or the big companies or big oil. They can just be like, we have a third way. We have this other solution. And that's pretty appealing to folks who don't want to be in a battle with big, powerful interests. And the industry is very good at taking advantage of that tendency.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, because on the spectrum of people opposed to change, there's a far end of people who just say, everything's fine, we don't need to do anything. But as you point out, there's this range of interests and people who can grab onto this as a way of saying, oh, look, mm-hmm. we care about this issue and do something about it, but doing it in a way that is not addressing any of the root problems and taking on any of the business interests who might object to any type of change. I'm glad you made that point. I'm curious about California's reimbursement, the fact that they're so willing to give these credits to operations that have questionable to just openly detrimental impacts on the environment. Is that something that could only be overturned by a new law in California? Or how are those regulations set? And is there any hope of that getting improved in the future?
So there are folks who are in deep on this. So the answer is there are pathways and people are working on it. And I'm not going to get everything exactly right, but this idea was created by a state law. So California was very early in having a state law be like, we're going to have these ambitious climate goals with these mechanisms to get there. And one of them was called the Low Carbon Fuel Standard. But then a lot of the details come later after the law is passed. And so there's an entity that gets a lot of the attention because they're doing a lot of the work of writing these details called the California Air Resources Board. And people are doing great work in California and around the country to call out what that board has gotten wrong. It's financial engineering to try to reach some goal where they're trying to say, we will spend X, this criteria to create a market for this type of low carbon fuel. It is a trading system. So companies in California can buy a credit for something created elsewhere and then keep buying the fuel they've always been buying in California. They're buying a pass. And so that's why the money can flow outside California. So the devil is always going to be in the details of what counts, what is eligible and makes the mark of you are considered a low carbon fuel, therefore you can sell a credit when you make it. And currently those details are wrong when it comes to using manure to create this gas. So it can be fixed through, from what I've seen, a punishingly arcane process. But there is public involvement. People are doing great work. So there's groups like Food and Water Watch, where I used to work. There's an environmental justice group called the Leadership Council in California that's working with groups who live near these big dairies in California who were like, this has not fixed our problems. They're in there. Earth Justice is involved. I'm going to not name everybody. There's groups really involved in the nitty-gritty of that process, turning people out to make comments to this board to say, when you set up this as the value for the methane generation that you're avoiding if you build a digester, you got that value wrong, you're skewing the whole thing. So they're in there figuring it out. And that is the venue where some of this damage could be dialed back. For other venues like federal things, who knows if we're ever going to finish a new farm bill, but we could make progress with Congress saying, one of the programs that I didn't name, but one of those conservation programs is called the Environmental Quality Incentives Program. It's been around, I don't know, 25, 30 years, and it's a good program. It pays for lots of things, and small farmers often are at the end of the line and don't get their application approved because it's also paying for management for factory farms that want to feed a digester. So we don't want EQIP to go away. We want to refine those rules for EQIP so the money gets spread around more fairly. So there's different places, there's different levers we have to pull to take on these subsidies. But it is often public policy, and it's just building the political muscle in the right place to start to turn those dials. And people are doing that work. So we have to find more people and work together to do it.
So what would you recommend if you're someone in Iowa or someone in some other state who's having a conversation with a big proponent of biogas digesters? Do you have any suggestions for an easy resource to share in that conversation, or two or three bullet points that you would communicate if you're talking to an elected official or someone so that they can better understand this issue?
The first tip is, this is too good to be true. The industry hype is too good to be true. So don't lose your head when they come to town and they're talking about this magic machine that fixes all your problems. That's not how it works. The most important points are, whose money is on the line here, and how speculative is the business model for this thing to actually run? What has to stay in place? Three different subsidies have to stay in effect. natural gas prices have to stay at X level. Is the financial package as precarious as most of them are? And what are the odds that that works? Is number one. Number two, who's taking all the risk? Is it the local government? Or are they going to pay for the roads? Are they going to pay for the fire trucks? Who's going to get all those subsidies until they go away and then they split town? And who's left with bonds and debt and all of the expenses that come from this? And then number three is, it is not magic. There is still waste at the end. What is the plan for the waste that comes out of this thing? And if it's to land, apply the digestate in the same too small of an area with not enough oversight that Cape Fo manure is being applied upon, what have we fixed for the community? Put your skeptic hat on when the very fancy slideshow comes to town about what a magic solution this is. There are more questions, and some of the materials I can send you are really good lists of the questions you ask, because they come in with a real razzle dazzle for some of these small towns, especially. There's folks in the Midwest who are like, oh, yeah, they flew our county supervisors to Denmark to see one of these things. There's a lot of hype, and you just have to keep your wits about you and really think about what you're still going to be left to deal with, which is still waste, still factory farms, and possibly more and bigger factory farms. So what did we get from that arrangement?
And of course, also in Iowa, we haven't touched on it much this episode, but Iowa has this problem of the hollowing out of rural areas. Mm-hmm. Seems like this absolutely does not do anything. And by encouraging increasing concentration and consolidation, it's just encouraging less people to be working and living in rural areas.
And speaking of working, CAFOs can be dangerous places to work, especially when we're talking about manure management. There's gas that can be produced and workers go in to clean something out and become overcome. We see that far too often. There's a sad record being compiled of workers being hurt, especially on the farm end of the digester, of collecting manure in this way comes with risks. And so it's not going to create a ton of jobs once it's constructed, but we do have to worry about the safety of the people who have those jobs is yet another question that has to be asked.
Let's see, any other things that we haven't touched on?
Those are the biggies. There's the communities that are dealing with factory farms are used to asking these tough questions because there's a lot of commonalities, whether that's the factory farm itself or the digester. But the other piece with this is the locking ourselves into this system. And when you start to look at the math of $1 million for a digester, a lot of money per mile of a pipeline to move the gas, starts to be real money. And if that money is available, often a lot of it from some public source, most communities could come up with a couple good ideas of some other way to get to a renewable energy system and to get to a more sustainable farming system. And that's never going to come up from the folks who want to build these things. So I think keeping those two things in mind, there's the day-to-day of it not fixing your day-to-day problems. And then this is an investment in the wrong future, a big investment if you really build out the number of digesters that are being proposed.
And I will share the links you send me. Are there any groups that you would recommend people get in touch with if they're wanting to work on this issue?
Some of it depends on where you live, but the Socially Responsible Agriculture Project has a network of folks talking to a lot of communities that are dealing with digester proposals. Friends of the Earth is working on it. Food and Water Watch is working on it. Iowa CCI, Missouri Rural Crisis Center, Land Stewardship Project. Like, folks are dealing with this because they have to in their states. So definitely don't go it alone. If you find somebody in your area who's dealing with animal agriculture, they're probably now also dealing with this.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate all of your work and calling it like it is. So really appreciate you taking time to talk with me. And thanks.
Great.
That's it for this week's episode of Canary in a Cornfield. Just a reminder, you can find us on social media, which includes X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and find our webpage at parkininstitute@drake.edu. And this podcast is also hosted by Substack Canary in a Cornfield, which will include some additional links and resources that go beyond just what's in the episode. So thank you all for tuning in, and I will be talking with you soon.